This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Matt and Patrick, usually a Jeff Stein day. Unfortunately, Jeff not able to make it with us today. But we have got a lot of good fun, a lot of stuff to get to today. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Patrick, how are you today?
Doing pretty well. My last day, and then I'm going to be gone for a little while to an undisclosed location.
where? All right, I won't ask you where the undisclosed location is. You brought the point. Maybe a good idea to get a little out of town here. It does sound like we're going to get a little hairy weather coming on in here in the next few days.
Yep, lots of rain coming in. Hopefully Sven will be able to join you and Brett on air tomorrow. But looking at some of the tweets, some interesting stuff. I mean, people looking at stuff, looking at models that I have no idea how to interpret.
Yeah.
They're suggesting there could be a major tornado event in southern Minnesota, northern Iowa, possibly. This is, like I said, this is people with the graphs that you need a degree to understand.
The scientists, which, by the way, we should follow scientists. Scientists are pretty smart. If you ask me to redesign my house, I am not an architect. That's why I hire an architect. They're architects. You see, that's how it works. Anywho, no, I've seen a little bit of that. The thing I'm actually most concerned about is the amount of water that could come out of the sky in the next 2 days. And granted, we need water. I mean, we need it. We need rain. And this actually could, undo a lot of the drought problems that we've had. The problem is you get it all at once in a very short period of time. You end up what happened in Tennessee, which is just god awful. Where it just, all of a sudden, can we mention the fact that this happened in China? This happened in Europe, in multiple locations in Europe, where all of a sudden you're getting these deluges of rain out of the sky where 6, 7, 8 inches is falling in a 4-hour period. And yeah, it's wiping out entire communities and towns. It's scary. That's the part that scares me. Now, I am not a weather guy either. But as you said, Patrick, I'm keeping an eye on things there. So hopefully nothing too bad. It does look like we'll have Sven Sundgaard with us tomorrow to talk weather, probably during some of these storms as they come on through. Big salute to all the water protectors out at the state capitol today. Stop line 3, a very impressive turnout out there. I've seen two reports which said 1,000 people were out there. I've seen one report or many other reports that say hundreds of people out there. It definitely was in the high 100s, I would just say. I don't know how many people you got, but a lot of people out there, a lot of people concerned about the water. Well done. Nice to turn out there. And I think that we can understand that that the incredibly heavy police presence there might have been a little bit of overkill. But hey, as long as you guys have the same exact kind of police presence when the non-maskers have their event, well then, I won't think that you basically just had the big police presence out there because there was a lot of Native Americans in that protest. I'll presume that you're going to have, when Whitey shows up to protest, because you know what? Whitey's the one who's been violent lately. Whitey's the one who's been trouble. So, I'm presuming that when that no-mask protest comes up here, that's going to be something you'll pay attention to. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Speaking, by the way, you mentioned Twitter. Thanks to, a lot of people out there just, showing up. A lot of great photos on Twitter. Thank you very much. It's good to see you there. This is kind of unfortunate. This story up in Chisago County. Patrick, how much fishing have you done? Do you do much fishing at all?
I haven't fished in a long time.
I do fish occasionally. I don't have a boat, and I don't have a boat down here. And I don't have, even with the boat I have, I do not have, I have use of, I should say. I do not have one of those fancy schmancy fish finders, those depth finders that you can see. You can see basically everything on in the water. It's amazing. Those things are pretty cool. Well, sometimes you find things that are not so cool. An observation from a bass fisherman led to the discovery of a submerged pickup truck with a body in it. the angling. Now, it doesn't sound like there's anything. This doesn't sound like there's any foul play here. This is a missing person case, and I'm wondering if this unfortunately this individual went off the boat launch and into the water, and that was the end of him. Unfortunately, the angler noticed an anomaly in his graph around 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday in the Chisago Lindstrom Lake public access off of Stinson Avenue in Chisago City, according to the Chisago County Sheriff's Office. It was thought to be a vehicle approximately 10 feet of water. That's a pretty quick drop-off right off the public docks there. So authorities responded to the scene, recovered the vehicle, determined it to be a GMC truck. Inside the truck was a deceased male. The Sheriff's Office did not identify the victim, but it says appears to be connected to a missing person case out of Friendly. Foul play is not suspected. Sheriff's Office is investigating. That is why last night, remember that story out in Minnetonka where the guy's on the car goes in the water? You don't realize how dangerous that is when your car is all of a sudden in water, because not only you think to yourself, well, if it sinks here, it doesn't. It floats out a little bit and then it goes down and you can be in, it's not going to be in, you know, 2 feet, 3 feet of water. You can be in 10 feet of water underwater in an enclosed vehicle. Have you ever tried to push a door open on a car in a lake? It's not easy. So it's kind of one of those things where it's incredibly dangerous. Sad story here. At least there'll be some closure with that story. Just what it sounds like is an unfortunate accident is the case there. 952-946-6205. So I want to get to, we're going to get to this whole hour, I think we're going to be on the Minnesota coronavirus update because there's a lot of stories that have come on out today. But I want to start off with something that was interesting. I had a friend of mine who was at Anoka Hennepin the other night when they had the speakers come in for that were the Howler Monkey exhibit. That's the anti-masking group. And she said she went out of her way to talk to about 10 of the people who were adamantly anti-mask, 10 of them. Before, during, and after the meeting. And she said she was being coy. She wasn't really letting on what she really felt, but she kind of, you know, played along with them to kind of get them to talk a little bit. Of the 10 people she talked to, 8 of them either didn't have a kid at all, didn't have a kid in that school district, or were homeschooling their kid, and it wasn't clear if their kids were homeschooled and they lived in that district or they didn't live in that district. But needless to say, she thought it was a little bit odd that of the 10 people she talked to at this meeting, 8 of them really were just screaming at in the air because any mask mandate within the public school would not affect them. It wouldn't. They didn't have kids. Their kids didn't go to the school district, or they were homeschooling their kids. And some of those people might be homeschooling the kids out of the district. So needless to say is the idea of the mask in the schools was irrelevant. And she was kind of flabbergasted at the majority of the people that she talked to didn't seem to have any money in the game, but yet were there booing, arguing, screaming, you know, just being belligerent. Like it was their kid being put in the electric chair, for God's sakes. This, by the way, is similar to a story I saw, and this was before, and I've tried to track it down. I can't remember which friend of mine posted this. They have 2 kids. One open enrolls into a different school district in the South Metro. There were school districts that had this mask discussion a few weeks ago. This was right before I went on vacation, and henceforth why I didn't really pay too much attention to it at that point. But she also said it was wild to go to one school board meeting in one school district and see a bunch of people out there protesting masks, and then go to a different school board in a different school board meeting, completely different school district. And it was virtually the same exact group of people who are all upset about the previous school district, only now they are outraged about this new school district. And the narrative she said was they clearly were implying that if this school passed a mask mandate, that it was going to affect their kids, when clearly at the fact that they're jumping from school district to school district, something's not right there. You know, there's a few other things that have happened over the last few months, which kind of got me kind of raising my eyebrows, kind of going, what's going on here? we talked about the fact that the media, which, by the way, did an amazing job, a failing job, an unbelievably failing, unbelievably bad job of any time there was a story out about, you know, the COVID rise, the first thing they mentioned. What was the first thing? Star Tribune? A lot of the TV stations? What's the first thing they mentioned? Let's talk about the 1% of breakthrough cases first. We're going to dedicate on the Star Tribune 8 paragraphs in the top of the page above the fold. Boy, oh boy, vaccinated people getting sick, which is 1% of the people getting sick. We're not going to even really mention the 99% of people getting sick who are unvaccinated, which is by far the larger story, until well down in the column. And they did this over and over. And it's not just here. It was everywhere. National media, other communities, other cities. This was something that was just, it was just bizarre how the only focus they were talking about, not the 99% of cases which were unvaccinated, which if you think about it, that there comes almost a public service element of the news to say, hey, you need to get vaccinated, or at least we're going to just let you know this is where the most of the vaccination is coming from. Nope. Run with the unvaccinated breakthrough cases are the biggest problem here. And if you dare, media, if you dare come at me and say, we never said that, what the hell were you saying then? When you basically make breakthrough cases that are 1%, less than 1%, 2% of all the cases, depending on the state you're in, the primary part of the story. That's the literal of not seeing the forest for the trees. Cutting off your nose to spite your face. My God, I can't explain it. But it was, I mean, they clearly were pushing the narrative about we should be questioning vaccines. And don't you dare look at me, news media, and say to me, oh, we weren't implying that. Of course you were. Why would you lead with that, you morons? Why the hell would your editorial staff make the decision to lead with that narrative? Let's talk about breakthrough vaccination cases first. No, you. There was definitely a narrative being pushed here in this country. Not once again, not just here in the Twin Cities, but nationally and many other communities as well. But it even goes down. I mean, there's a conservative I follow who she definitely is a moderate. But she's an unapologetic Republican. She's one of these people that last year, last fall, was like, when is Tim Walz going to sit there and get for the new plan for kids going back to public school? When is this going to happen? How is this going to happen? Well, she just posted her kids going back to school photos. Her kids go to private school. But yet here she was, definitely trying to inflate the anger, inflate the I am so angry. Look at me, public school mom, regular suburban mom, blah, 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 blah. It didn't affect her. She has private school. I guarantee the private school had already sent all of the information. She knew exactly what she was doing last year and this year. No, it was just made up outrage. And we have to kind of get, I want to step back, and then we kind of have to step back a little bit here, because clearly, so whether it's people showing up for these school board meetings where they're talking their lungs, where it clearly seems to be at the very least the same group of people or a substantial amount of the same group of people who may or may not be getting paid by some nefarious element just to go to these groups. I mean, it reminds me a lot of the Brooks Brothers riot. When you look back at that picture, you realize almost everyone in that picture was not just some Floridian who was angry. They were all Republican operatives that were there basically flown in to basically try to look like they were just regular people. But that was, and by the way, to stop the recount at that point, remember when Republicans were against stopping recounts? Stop counting! But you have this at the school boards where I think we can call into question whether or not, I mean, how much is this AstroTurf or is this grassroots? It seems much more AstroTurf than grassroots. We can call in the fact that the media seem to be, and once again, the media gets dragged around by the conservatives like a dumb mule sometimes. And there definitely seemed to be the narrative being pushed here that the biggest problem was the 1% of breakthrough cases in vaccines, which weren't leading to the death rates nearly as you saw in the unvaccinated, while ignoring the far larger, more important element of that story, which is the unvaccinated and their death rate and sickness rate with the Delta variant. And I know conservatives myself who are out there who are kind of putting out this narrative, who are putting out this idea that I'm just a regular suburban mom and I'm outraged because public schools. Well, your kid goes to private school. So your outrage is manufactured, and you're just trying to stir the pot. I have another friend of mine who's a nurse who said to me, she goes, have you read really what's going on in some of these conservative states? And in regards, now she's a nurse up here, but she's read a lot of what's going on in some of these other states. And she says, it's hard. And she made the comment, she goes, it's hard to imagine the Republicans could try to do a worse job than they have. And I think my comment back to her is like, it does seem like about the only thing that can make this work is if, you know, Republican governors demanded that you lick every doorknob as you go into every building, that's about the only way this could get worse. But when she said that to me, I really kind of stepped back and I said, wait a second here. If you look at the response from the Republican states, where Republicans are pretty much in control of everything, Missouri, Arkansas, where these latest Delta variant outbreaks were the worst. Texas, Alabama, Mississippi, Florida, now South Dakota. What do you see but almost a belligerent attempt to sicken as many people as possible? In spite, I mean, it's not even close. I mean, it really is remarkable. What was it in Mississippi? Is it 10 or 20%? I'll pull it up here really quick. In Mississippi, I think it was 20% of the people there are sick with coronavirus. And the kids in the school and the teachers, 20%. And the governor is still sitting. I mean, think about that. That's an insane amount of people, far worse than at any point last year. And the governor is still sitting there saying, well, we don't want to rush to judgment and put a mask mandate in for schools because a lot of these people could be just getting sick out of the community. Regardless of where they're getting sick, it's dramatically affecting your schools. Why aren't you putting a mask mandate in? That's what I said. He's like, is Reeves, the governor of Mississippi, is he trying? Is he absolutely trying to make his people sick? And I actually have a theory here. They are. I think Republicans, to try to make Joe Biden look bad, to try to get the voting base on their side, I think they've actually purposely tried to sicken and kill as many of their own constituents as possible to make it seem like Joe Biden, see, it's out of control because of Joe Biden. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. When you look at the whole thing from the top to bottom, when you look at the same people showing up for these anti-masking events, you look at the media being controlled and running with the far less important element of the story as the primary part of the story in regards to unvaccinated breakthrough cases or vaccinated breakthrough cases versus the far larger problem of unvaccinated people getting sick. Yeah, I'll get that right. And then as now you look at how badly these states have done, how do you not start asking the question, are you purposely trying to do this to try to win next year's elections? 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. There's more on this. I'll break down a little bit more when I come on back, plus a lot more to get to with the Minnesota Corona. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I mean, clearly there is something going on here to try to basically rile up as many people as possible. But here's the problem. I mean, and the reason why we are in Afghanistan, you know, that we hear about Afghanistan now and all these Republicans who, mind you, once again, all these Republicans a month ago were applauding the fact that we were getting out of Afghanistan. And it sure as heck is not Joe Biden's fault that the military there, the Afghani military, basically dropped all their weapons and surrendered instantaneously to the Taliban. Something, I mean, I think our intelligence agencies should have had a little bit more of an idea. And this, we've talked about that a few times. But I think Biden is getting our people out of there as best as he can. And it puts the Republicans, and the Republicans, you can tell this was not their choice of narrative to try to bring Biden down, because it's like, why aren't we thinking about the Afghanis who, by the way, we can't bring Afghanis here? We gotta ship them someplace else. I mean, someplace else that's not America. We care about them, but not enough to bring them here because they're just immigrants gonna just leech off our system. I mean, so you can tell the fact that they kind of keep getting stuck in these, you know, kind of paradigm loops in regards to their criticism of Biden. That we are great. Isn't it great we're getting out of Afghanistan, but we should still be in Afghanistan for 20 years. Oh, we got to do something to save the Afghanis, but don't bring the Afghanis here, you know, that sort of thing. So clearly to me, and I also can tell the fact that the way that the Republican pundits talk about Afghanistan, which is basically at, you know, 5 billion decibels, screaming about why aren't we doing more, just tells me they're trying to make this stick as far as an issue. But the reality is that, you know, Biden, and once again, and I think there's been some very good people who've taken not only W and Trump to task, but Obama to task. I think you can look at all three presidents since we got into Afghanistan. They failed to I mean, the Afghanis looked at the American democracy and said no. And whether that was W. Bush basically appealing to the warlords and giving up, and basically when you had Taliban on the ropes and you had Bin Laden and Tora Bora quitting and basically running to Iraq and then basically working with the warlords in Afghanistan as opposed to the local communities to basically run the country, to Obama's kind of mentality of running it like a Peace Corps almost. And I mean, hearts and minds are fine, but you got to understand these people. You can't just force a democracy on them, especially one where you're working with drug dealers and warlords, and think that this is going to, you know, somehow go over. To Trump's disastrous decision to negotiate with the Taliban minus the Afghani government, which immediately discredited them while gave the Taliban all the credit and glory for getting the United States out of the country. Biden just was the guy that didn't stop the. And once again, and this was all set up by Trump. Trump basically pushed to get him out, tied Biden's hands. And so Biden just not getting out of the way. I mean, he's of the last four presidents, he's the least of the problems. But that's why the Republicans are trying to scream this issue into existence. And the reason why is this. Take it back a little bit. In June, Biden is flying high. We're looking like we've gotten past this. Delta variant really hasn't taken off yet. You've got, the economy is looking good. The stimulus is doing what it is doing. It's getting people back to work. I mean, the biggest problem, the Republicans are trying to make it seem like, why can't we force people to work for crap wages, for crap jobs? Why is Biden failing us there? Really? That's your big thing? That paying people crap wages for crap jobs is something, that's the bridge you're going to stand on? So they didn't really have anything. So my theory is that there was a coordinated effort by the Republicans to basically sicken and kill as many of their constituents as possible. And I know as hard as that is to kind of believe, I think it is. I think is what happened. And they started basically, my guess is they hired groups to bring in these crisis actors into these school board meetings. And that's why you're seeing in some of these school board meetings the same exact people that were at that school board meeting all of a sudden at this school board meeting, and they can't have kids in that school, and all the same people have kids in this school, so something's wrong. And you have basically the media focusing only on the vaccinated breakthrough cases. Vaccinated. If you don't cover the vaccinated breakthrough cases, all of our advertisers who have conservative leanings, they're going to pull their ads. I don't know if that's the case. I can't say for sure one way or the other, but that's the quickest way you get media under control in this day and age. Mad as hell, I'm not going to take it anymore. But that's, you know, so you have that going on. You have Republicans acting as if, even in the state of Minnesota, you have Republicans who are acting as if, I'm just a suburban mom who's angry about my kids going to public school, whose kids don't go to public school, they go to private school. So they're clearly trying to raise up anger and ire. But then as you focus on states where Republicans have been in control, and this has been a nightmare. And by the way, it was 15% of the kids and teachers in Mississippi schools are in quarantine now. 15% of the entire state's schools. And the governor is not doing anything. Florida's death numbers and sick numbers are far beyond anything that happened last year. Think about that. Texas, Mississippi, Alabama, Missouri, Arkansas, and now South Dakota. South Dakota is a mess right now. An absolute mess. Let me read this to you here. 2 weeks after the annual motorcycle rally at Sturgis, South Dakota, reported COVID infections in the state have risen sixfold. South Dakota counted 3,819 new cases in the past 2 weeks, including seven deaths, up from 644 cases in 14 days preceding it. It makes the state with the largest percentage increase of COVID cases in the past 2 weeks. Republican-led state. And all you have to do there is saying, I'm for money over my state's health and well-being. You're going to die, but they're going to make money with Sturgis, so you died for a good cause. That's what they honestly are saying. This is kind of, or I'm paraphrasing it, but it's not too far off. I think what had happened is, in an attempt to take down Biden, they purposely went out there and let Delta variant take as many of their own constituents as possible. Make them sick, kill them. I honestly do. And I think that they're willing to go along with this to try and are praying that this wipeout of these unvaccinated people goes all the way into the next election cycle, because then they think that that's a winning strategy. But then they realized, well, the vast majority of people actually are for masks and the vast majority of people are for vaccinations. And so now all of a sudden they're frantically trying to get off this issue, this narrative, and they're still not fixing it because they're hoping they can find some way to change the narrative and come back at Biden on it. But now it's all about Afghanistan. If you ever found anything, if there were ever emails, if there is ever a correspondence stream or thread that you found that actually pointed out that the Republicans were actually doing this, how could you not charge them with murder? Because I'm going to be honest with you, after my friend who's the nurse said, she's, you know, her point was, you know, if these people couldn't have done a worse job if they tried. And the reality is, maybe they are trying to do as bad a job as possible. And if that's the case, and we ever find out that to be true, then how do we not have consequences for killing off a substantial amount of your own people? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We're late. A lot to get to with the Minnesota coronavirus update, including Vikings stuff. I got updates on what happened yesterday as well. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Since I started reading that article about Sturgis, let me go with that a little bit more here. Once again, we were talking about they have sixfold increase in cases there, and they've had seven new deaths there. The state's rate of COVID-19 infections per capita in the past 2 weeks is the bottom half of the country, but that's a sharp and sudden increase in case counts that sets it apart. Meade County, the home to Sturgis, has counted at 330 new cases in the last 2 weeks, up from the 20 reported in the 2 weeks before the rally, according to John Hopkins. Case count, the 1,550% increase comes after the 1,550% increase after the motorcycle rally, which usually draws about 500,000 people. Probably its biggest year ever, according to County Sheriff Ron Merwin. Dr. Shankar Kura, the Vice President of Medical Affairs at Monument Health, which operates hospitals serving Western South Dakota, including one in Sturgis, says the events this year rally feel like a replay of last year. In June, Monument Health had three COVID patients, a pandemic low for hospitalizations, and Kura said he thought that number might drop to zero. Now the number is up to 58. About half of that was the peak in the winter. The people in the hospital are younger, almost 99.9% are unvaccinated, he said. It's not the highest it's ever been. It's definitely the number that puts us at a disadvantage, and it's climbing and climbing fast. And it's not like it's going to just stop tomorrow. So the question is when do you start seeing it ease up a little bit, and you can kind of start estimating where the top of this curve is going to be? It's too soon to know if Sturgis rally, which began on August 6th, ended August 15th, had a direct effect in the increase. Ooh, I can answer that. Yes, it did. Because I'm not a freaking idiot. Hey, Sturgis had something to do with it. Meade County is now reporting a 36% positivity rate with about one in every three COVID tests returning positive results. Jesus. 82% of the cases in the county on Tuesday said the highest daily number yet, eclipsing the 68 cases it reported on August 27th, 2020. From the onset of the pandemic, South Dakota has been a higher per capita rate of infections than all but two states, North Dakota and Tennessee, per an NBC News tally. So they've done a horrible job there. In an email Tuesday, you want to know how sometimes the government, Republicans take over government agencies. Listen to this crap. In an email Tuesday, a South Dakota Department of Health spokesperson, Daniel Buccelli, said the spikes in COVID cases in the state are following a national trend being experienced in every state. No, they're not. As a matter of fact, if you look at the maps, your state is by far the worst right now. So, yeah, you can try to downplay it. Hey, nothing to see here. Nothing to see here. Wednesday's COVID-19 Minnesota COVID update for today. Minnesota's COVID-19 update for Minnesota Department of Health includes 1,404 new cases, 7 newly reported deaths. The state's death toll is 7,782 since the start of the pandemic. And once again, I know South Dakota person is, well, you just said South Dakota has 7 deaths over the last 2 weeks, and you're reporting one today. Yeah, that's because we have cities and people here in Minnesota. You're basically a godforsaken grassland that, you know, a few people stumbled into, all right? And of course, the Native Americans and their tribal lands, which it should be, they should have complete and total rights over. You know, God forbid they actually have that. But no, as far as the white population, yeah, there's no one living there. But yeah, you guys got horrible numbers. And when you do the per capita numbers, which basically means we equate the number of people that live in South Dakota with the number of people that live in Minnesota, and then compare the numbers that way, well, you guys suck. I mean, real bad too. The state's death toll is 7,782 since the beginning of the pandemic. As of August 22nd, the state reported that 3,290,707 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,080,709 people have completed the vaccine series. 55.3% of Minnesota's total population, including children under the age of 12 who are not eligible for the vaccine, have completed the vaccination series. It jumps to 65.4% when excluding kids under the age of 12. When you get up to 18 and older, it's over 70%. Through August 24th, the number of people with COVID hospitalizations in Minnesota was 576. That's up from 547 reported on Tuesday, so almost another 30 more. Of those hospitalized, 160 people are in intensive care, 416 are in general hospital care, both of the highest they've been since the early May during the tail end of the spring surge. The spring peak saw a high of 202 patients in intensive care, 517 people in general hospital care. Here's how many people are hospitalized based on regions in Minnesota through. This doesn't mean each patient there is a resident of that area. In the metro area, 85 ICU patients, 248 non-ICU. In Central, 28 ICU patients, 47 non-ICU. Southeast, 22 ICU patients, 52 non-ICU. Northeast, 13 ICU patients, 14 non-ICU. Northwest, 6 ICU patients, 16 non-ICU. South Central, 4 ICU, 18 non-ICU. Southwest, 1 ICU, 14 non-ICU. West Central, 1 ICU, 7 non-ICU. The Southwest and West Central, they were zero yesterday, so they got people in them now. And the reality is, when you look at West Central, you look at the southwestern part of the state, South Central part of the state, how many ICU beds do you guys have to begin with in the first place in those regions? Once again, we've talked about how the medical system has basically, through cost-cutting measures, left a lot of rural America vulnerable to something of this nature. The 1,404 positive results on Wednesday's update were from 27,700 completed tests, creating a positivity rate of 5.5%, according to Johns Hopkins. The positivity rate over the past 7 days is 6.56%, which has been rising. Once again, we were recently below 1%. But thanks to Republicans and the unvaccinated, we're sky high again. Yeah, it sucks. Also, I should mention here, two more groups have joined the growing number of who are withdrawing from the Minnesota State Fair. I think in the long run, I think the Minnesota State Fair, the decision to go without masks at the very least, will be and end up being an absolute massive mistake. I think especially if we start, because I can tell you right now, the medical people are going to be keeping track. The state's going to be keeping track of what's going on at the State Fair. And if all of a sudden by mid the second week, a week into it, on Wednesday or so next week, we're all of a sudden starting to see numbers spike. You're going to sit there and say, well, we didn't want to. What are we supposed to do? And we'll have to determine that. But I think this decision to basically go with, you know, personal responsibility, which once again, as we've seen the personal responsibility route in Florida and Texas, Missouri, Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, South Dakota, it sucks. It's the stupidest way to do this. And yeah, because guess what? People aren't responsible. Conservation Corps of Iowa and Minnesota posted on Facebook Wednesday, announcing the decision to pull out of the state fair due to the highly contagious Delta variant. "We've decided to err on the side of the abundance of caution. It's a very disappointing choice, but we ultimately feel it's the right one," the post said. And Minneapolis band, the Von Tramps, shared on Tuesday they have made the decision to cancel their state fair appearance, which was scheduled to be this Friday at the Rockabilia merchandise booth with Husker Du. The Delta variant concerns, we think it's best to play it safe this year. We will see you next time at the state fair," promised the post said. Conservation Corps and the Von Tramps are the latest to bow out of the state fair. Other groups have announced they won't be at the fair due to the event's controversial move to not require masks indoors or vaccinations, negative COVID tests for entry. They include, of course, Education Minnesota, the foodie news site Heavy Table, State Fair, and Low-Cut Connie, which canceled its grandstand show over the state fair's COVID-19 policies. A lot of media outlets as well have also bowed out or are having a much more restricted and a reserved presence at the state fair. And by the way, I should mention, hey, it's going to be a lot of fun at the Minnesota GOP booth of the state fair. And I'm going to presume that just because of the way they are, they're not going to be demanding masks. Or are they a bunch of freaking hypocrites, really? Are they a bunch of hypocrites? So I'd say everyone go breathe in there. Especially if they'd want everyone who might not be feeling bad or feeling a little bit bad. Don't worry. You can get the Minnesota GOP booth is always welcoming. Well, some have pulled out completely. Other vendors and organizations have made big changes to the state fair. Hamlin-Salem Dining Halls, citing health and safety concerns, will have their indoor seating areas closed off for the fair. The Minnesota DNR won't be offering activities inside its building either. The state fair, that's a good idea because, God, have you done the DNR booth out there? That's packed, and especially midday. Oh, it gets real packed. The state fair runs Thursday, August 26th through Labor Day. You can find the latest updates on the fair's webpage there. Also should mention, Delta Airlines employees who have not been vaccinated will soon have to pay $200. This is employees. I got to admit, I don't quite know what to think about this. I have to be honest with you. A part of me is like, hey, go, way to go, Delta. But a side of me is like, wow, this is the corporation's hurting the worker to a point. But, all you have to do is then you don't have a problem. Delta Airlines employees who have not been vaccinated will soon have to pay a $200 monthly surcharge to take a weekly COVID-19 test. The new monthly charge will begin on November 1st for all employees enrolled in Delta's healthcare plan. Chief Executive Officer Ed Bastian announced on Wednesday, while 75% of Delta workers are already vaccinated, Bastian said that the cost of treating the deadly virus has put the company at financial risk. The average hospital stay for COVID-19 has cost Delta $5,000 per person. Bastian said in a statement, the surcharge will be necessary to address the financial risk and decisions to not vaccinate is creating for our company. In recent weeks, since the rise of the Delta variant, all the Delta Airlines employees, hospitalized with COVID or not fully vaccinated. Those who are not vaccinated will also be subject to weekly COVID-19 tests starting next month. Bastian said those who are on the fence about getting the vaccine due to the lack of Food and Drug Administration approval now have no reason to not get the jab. So you have all that. And yeah, it's not getting any better. I can go back to what I've been saying. I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead. And I don't want you bankrupt for the next 10 years of your life. I don't want you to have to sell off your family farm. I don't want you to have to sell off your home or your car. And trust me when I say this, the people who are screaming at you to not get vaccinated, they are not your friends. They are not doing you any favors. They are hoping that you will go along with them so that it gives validity to their fringe thought processes on this at your expense, because the same exact people who are telling you don't get vaccinated are going to be the same people saying, well, we never said you shouldn't get vaccinated. We just said it should be your own personal choice. It's all on you. It's not on us. It's not our decision. It was on you. You know, It is really sad we are at this point in this country where I can't determine whether or not the Republicans in states like Florida and Texas and Missouri and Arkansas, Mississippi, Alabama, South Dakota, I can't determine whether or not they are purposely trying to sicken their own constituents. And that is an incredibly sad point in this country. Because the reality is we used to listen to educated people, not vilify them just because they were daring to say something different that we disagreed with. And reminder, for you to be at this point, you have to look at the American Medical Association, the CDC, the World Health Organization, the Mayo Clinic, John Hopkins. You have to look at all these medical people from all these different organizations, and they're all lying. But this disputed, disreputable doctor over here who's suggesting that you should take a veterinarian's medicine for horses and inject it up your keister and that will keep you safe. He sounds like he knows what he's talking about. That's counterbalance. Really? It really is a sad time in this country. I'll come back. The Vikings, there has been some results about the meeting they had over there yesterday. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll find out what Kirk Cousins thought about the presentation when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. The Minnesota Vikings have one of the lowest COVID-19 vaccination rates in the NFL among players. It has a front office and head coach Zimmer frustrated with the regular season starting in 3 weeks. Enough of an issue, he brought in Dr. Michael Osterholm, an epidemiologist and director of Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, to talk to the team early this week about the COVID-19 vaccine and answer any questions players might have. A Washington Post report released during training camp showed the Vikings had 70% of the players going through the vaccination process with 64.5% fully vaccinated. That means only on a 90-player roster, as many as 27 players are not vaccinated. The NFL has strict protocols in place for players that are not vaccinated when it comes to team meetings and travel. Vaccinated players can essentially go about their daily basis as they were before the pandemic. Kirk Cousins had to miss 5 days of camp after being in close contact with Kellen Mond, who had tested positive for COVID-19. Cousins spoke with reporters on Wednesday ahead of Vikings preseason game at Kansas City, was asked about the meeting with Osterholm. Here's his exact quote. "It was a great meeting. It was informative, and it was what it was." And of course, a lot of people are focusing on, "and it was what it was," Cousins said. After returning from the COVID-19 list, Cousins called his vaccination status a private health matter. I'm pretty sure he's unvaccinated. He's following NFL protocols that are in place for players who've not been vaccinated, players who've been consistent throughout training camp, saying the vaccine is a personal choice for everyone and they'll treat each other with respect. I won't divide the locker room. Well, good job, idiot. You already have. And by the way, God forbid one of you clowns gets sick and they have to forfeit a game. Because I can tell you right now, if your job was not to divide the locker room, you're going to have a lot of people divided over there. But will that change after player? And they talk about this story. They talk about, will that change? Zimmer was asked Tuesday about the meeting and said it was great to have Osterholm there. He's just not sure it will cause any players to change their minds and get the vaccine. He said he just wants the players and the family to stay healthy, safe, and not get sick. The Vikings and the NFL teams risking having forfeit games or play without key players if they test positive for COVID-19 during the regular season. Like I said, you know, you got 17 games. You got one last preseason game. But you got 17 games ahead. You've got up to 27 of your players not vaccinated. You see that 99% of all cases are on the unvaccinated. And you see that this Delta variant moves real quick. Hey, I would just be able to hope that people like Coach Zimmer. I mean, I don't think Kirk Cousins gives a rat's caboose what I have to say. And I honestly, I sincerely believe that. I have zero doubt he and many Republicans, many anti-vaxxers could care less of what I have to say. But in the case of Cousins, you would think his coach was saying, "Hey, I just don't want you sick," would have some sway, but apparently doesn't seem to be. Osterholm was asked what he talked about. This was on Morning Joe, apparently. "What I shared with them was really just addressing this disinformation that's out there, a rumor that 6,700 people have died from taking the vaccine. Absolutely not true. A rumor the vaccine makes you sterile. Absolutely not true. And it's amazing once you different information piece of information becomes talked about, it becomes fact. And so my guess is going to be that Osterholm heard from the Vikings people saying that, oh, 6,700 people died. And he's like, no, that's not true. And he heard from the Vikings, this will make you sterile. Well, and that's not true. But they are convinced of it because Google. Going back to Osterholm's comments. And so what I did was just systematically went through and talked about what kind of risks are of getting the vaccine. What are the risks of not getting the vaccine? And the other thing I repealed to the team as a team, we have to take care of each other. Getting vaccinated today is not just about protecting yourself. If you're an adult, it's about protecting your kids from getting the virus. If you're a leader on a football team, it's about the community looking to you. Young men and women in our community saying, in fact, they're not going to get it. Why should I get it? But if they do get it, maybe I should get it. And so I think it really is an ideal opportunity to kind of to share about vaccine and what it means to the community. Duh, freaking duh. Nicely said, Osterholm. And so now we have, and this is once again, this is Osterholm repeating what he said in this Vikings meeting. And here you have Kirk Cousins, who once again, I would make the argument, is a crap leader because if he really cared about his team, he would not risk forfeiting games or losing major players. And he would show, hey, guys, I'm again. Imagine the impact he would have if he went into that locker room and said, hey, you know, here's the deal. I'm against it, but I'm going to get the shot. Let's go through with it. Boom. Done. I think everyone else on the team would be getting the shot for sure, right? Absolutely. Instead, now, and Osterholm brings the point out, as warped as our priorities are in this country right now, an athlete will get people to get the vaccine. So here's his opportunity to help people in the community. And I have not seen a press conference with Kirk Cousins scheduled up anytime in the recent future. Wow. Good luck, guys. Good luck. That's going to come back and bite you in the ass. Hour two up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show, broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios at AM 950. Matt Patrick here today. Patrick, have you tried the Milk Crate Challenge yet?
Fortunately, I have not.
Do you know what the Milk Crate Challenge is?
I just learned what it was the other night. Not for me.
For everyone out there who's listening, who's like, what, Matt? Basically, which means you don't have a TikTok account. And it's not like I got a TikTok account. Do I have an account? I might have an account. It's not like I post anything up there. All my videos are for my secret OnlyFans page, which now, good news, OnlyFans says they're not going to take the porn down. So... good news, you find the secret Matt McNeil Show page.
So you never followed through on your threat to follow your kid back from those Rudy Luther ads we did?
No, I promised that. But I mean, I can't even figure out how to sign up for that. But you can find, if you can find the fans only fans page for the Matt McNeil Show, it's out there. You just got to find it. Bon appetit. Anywho, going back to the Milk Crate Challenge. Now, what this is. So everyone knows what a milk crate is. I mean, if you have a college student, you know what a milk crate is. It's an old milk crate. And, you know, you take them and you stack them so you can walk on them, so upside down. And you put one, and then you put two, and then you put three, and you create kind of this sideways pyramid. Not like a full pyramid, but like just, you know, you go up about six milk crates tall and then down. And the goal is to walk up the crates and down the crates. The problem is, it's not exactly stable. And I'm going to post a story up on social media a little bit later on from the Hill. You got to see this guy fall. How is he even alive? He got one of those where he fell and the middle of his back hits right on the edge of the milk crate after he does one of those whoop-a-doo, bang. Oh my God, that had to hurt. Like he was not well. He is not well. So this is the new thing stupid people are injuring themselves with, the Milk Crate Challenge. Doctors now warning against people trying the Milk Crate Challenge because of its dangerous nature, claiming real people are getting real injuries. Judging from that one guy, yeah, I would say so. The Milk Crate Challenge, when people just set up a pyramid of milk crates and try to walk across without falling to the ground, has recently gone viral on social media platforms. Videos of the people attempting to difficult challenge have circulated on the internet, which usually end with the structure collapsing to the ground and the daring participant falling. Ha ha ha, they got hurt. Really? Doctors, however, are now putting out warnings that the seemingly humorous activity actually poses a serious risk, especially amid the pandemic. Okay, can I just ask, does a doctor have to put this out? I mean, medical professionals are saying the challenge is putting an additional strain on hospital systems. Oh, boy. That's all you want to do is do something that's going to get you into the place where everyone with the Delta variant is. Good thinking. Medical professionals are concerned about the strain on the hospital systems because participants who do not complete the walk often need medical attention afterwards. Yeah. Everyone needs to do their part and support the first responders and healthcare providers, and that involves not partaking in challenges like this one that are putting additional strain on the system. Sean Anthony, the orthopedic surgeon specializing in sports medicine at Mounts. Okay, sports medicine, whoa. I think we're kind of, how about idiot medicine? While it's not known how many injuries or hospital visits the viral challenge has caused, Anthony, who described the dare as a dangerous internet challenge, told the Post that colleagues nationwide have been reporting on online forums that they are seeing more challenges, particular injuries, including shoulders dislocations, rotator cuff tears, ACL and meniscus tears, broken wrists, and spinal cord injuries. Ow! That dude that fell in that video, he had to have a spinal cord injury. Doctors are saying, social media platforms, especially TikTok, are to blame for amplifying and spreading the challenge. TikTok, in a statement to the Post, said the platform prohibits content that promotes and glorifies dangerous acts. Yeah, but you get the pyramid challenge. It sounds like it's been out there, so that's on you guys. Also, I should mention, I don't know, Patrick, do you remember the woman in Pennsylvania who went into the grocery store and said, I've got COVID, and started coughing all over the food?
That was right at the beginning of everything, wasn't it?
It was last summer. I think it was summer, yeah. But the woman in Pennsylvania reportedly been sentenced to jail after she coughed on the food in local supermarket on purpose last year while claiming to have coronavirus, prompting the store to have to get rid of thousands of dollars in merchandise. The Associated Press reports the 37-year-old Margot Cirko, C-I-R-K-O, has been sentenced to at least a year in jail for this stupidity. Good. After pleading guilty to making bomb threats earlier this year, the news comes after Cirko was charged with making terrorist threats last year. Police in Hanover Township said at the time that the woman entered the local Jarity's making verbal threats that she was sick while intentionally coughing on and spitting on food and biting other food merchandise. I didn't hear about that. She allegedly continued the behavior in a few more aisles. Police then, before attempting to steal a 12-pack of beer, which, by the way, if your ear just perked a little bit, I bet you can see where this is going. Tried to steal a 12-pack of beer as she was ordered to leave the store by employees. In addition to being charged with making terrorist threats, she was also charged with then threatening to use biological agents and making criminal mischief, which were both felony counts. According to the AP, Cirko's attorney claimed the woman was intoxicated during the crime and did not actually have COVID-19. While in court this week, Cirko said she wished she could take it back. Co-owner of Jarity's said the chain lost $35,000 worth of merchandise because of this woman.
She wasn't the only one who did this, was she? Because I remember, weren't there some teens in, like, Virginia
or
who did this?
Florida. I think it was Florida. I think what you and I are remembering is, remember back last fall, after Sturgis, people started getting face masks back again. And reminder, we were still a lot more cautious back then. And numbers started going bad. And I think that's what happened, is that these stores started putting these face mask mandates in, and these people, you know, mentally compromised or drunk were going into these stores and doing these things. But good. Patrick, I'm going to put it up to you. I can give you the latest from the Minnesota GOP, which is delightful in the whole where things are at with the Lazaro, or I've got a Mike Lindell update, both of which are guaranteed to enjoy. Your call. What do you want, Minnesota GOP first or Lindell?
Let's do the GOP first, since I'm sure they'll kind of dovetail, I'm sure.
They might, considering how few people are stepping up here to become the next head of the Minnesota GOP. Lindell might be the next look at that in a second, though. But going with the GOP, first of all, Peter Callahan, once again, taking things off of Twitter that I'm finding here. The campaign finance board says GOP committees that received money from Anthony Lazaro can either give it back to him or charities in increments of less than $100. So this is actually this is not a GOP rule. This is a rule by the campaign finance board that they can't just give, if he gave them $1,000, you can't just give $1,000 to a charity. You can give is $100. Callahan goes on from MinnPost, goes on to add, in a memo, staff head Jeff Sigrunson wrote, however, it seems clear that some charitable contributions over $100 have already been made, as seen in social media posts and media news media reports. Additionally, in some cases, it would be difficult for the committee to donate the money in $100 increments. For example, the Republican Party itself received over $31,000 from Mr. Lazzaro. That would require 310 separate contributions to 501c3 organizations to divest that amount. And so, yeah, they've got a bit of a problem here because they have this money from Lazzaro and none of them want it. And okay, I'll give the GOP a little credit here in the state. None of them want the money. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. But where they go from, how they get rid of it, I don't know. That it is going to be interesting to see how they do get rid of it, because that $100 maximum is going to be a bit of a problem. That is going to be a bit of a problem. It should be mentioned. Okay, so the other thing that has been happening, and this one comes from Broadcorp once again. So I don't know if you remember the Minnesota GOP Executive Committee determined the upcoming emergency Minnesota GOP State Central Committee meeting on August 30th would not be recognized in an official meeting due to the procedural issue. So this was an interesting side note from the GOP. There are clearly a lot of members of the Republican Party of Minnesota who are furious at the GOP giving and once again allowing Jennifer Carnahan to be the tie-breaking vote on a decision that gave her a $38,000 severance package for basically screwing up her job so bad she's crippled this party probably for the next 5 to 10 years. That being said, and there's also a lot of other questions that are spinning around about what the heck's been going on within the party. And so after that executive meeting, there was a state central committee. And once again, there's two different committees here. The Minnesota GOP Executive Committee, those are the people that are running the Minnesota GOP overall from state, and there, you know, a handful of statewide people. It's not just a bunch of people here. It's a pretty standard executive committee that comes from across the state. And then there is the state central committee. I'm not sure how many people are in the Minnesota GOP central committee. I think it's a few hundred, 300 or so. But there's a lot of members of that central committee who are furious at this $38,000 payout. It's like, how do you give someone who was that bad at her job money? She should not be getting any money. And so that was, and immediately after the people started saying the state central committee meeting was going to happen, people who either were Jennifer Carnahan apologists or executive committee apologist who wanted to basically just give her the money and get beyond this, immediately said the state central committee can't just have a meeting and they have to give a 10-day notice and everyone in the state central committee has to be notified of said meeting before that 10-day notice, 10 days before the meeting. So there was already a question of whether or not that meeting was actually going to happen. Now we actually have a definitive answer that the GOP executive committee has said that they are going to not allow that meeting to take place. The emergency meeting called for August 30th was to address concerns about the numerous Minnesota GOP activists about the allegations involving Anton Lazzaro and former Minnesota GOP Jennifer Carnahan. The decision to not recognize the meeting, right or wrong, will create more drama. I got to agree with Broadcorp on that is going to be a problem. But this is truly, if you are a Republican, This next point that Broadcorp brought up has got to be the one that scares you the most right now. So we have all this drama with Carnahan. That was last Thursday. We are at Wednesday of this week. Tomorrow, it's almost a week out from her removal as the head of the Minnesota GOP. It is 2 days from 2 weeks from this whole thing with Anthony Lazzaro broke once again. Allegedly, if you heard any of the allegations that were made yesterday, holy God, you had better pray that no one in the GOP knew about this, because and once again, but the crimes that happened to these girls is the priority. But if you are in the Minnesota GOP and you hear these crimes, how do you not immediately raise every red flag you can and say, holy God, we have got a major problem here we have to fix? I'm not saying you do that out in public, but you got to at least pull the executive committee aside and say, yeah, this offering purses and, oh my God, liquor and money, dear God, we got a big problem. Since that point, like I said, there was a very entertaining, and I get, like I said, some of the Republicans, you made me laugh, and they intentionally made me laugh. There were people saying, would you be willing to run this? And they went from, oh, hell no, it's like, to why do you hate me? And I thought some of these responses were very good, because there's a lot of people that don't want anything to do with this. They can already tell this is a mess. Not only do you have a financial mess, because there clearly seems to be a very large financial mess in a political party that just doesn't have any money by their own accounts. They don't have that much money. But on top of that, you're going to dive into this Anthony Lazzaro thing. And I think a lot of people, and of course, then the allegations of Carnahan's abuse to staffers, the non-disclosure agreements, I think that there's a lot of people that are saying, okay, if I give everyone the benefit of the doubt here, there still is as much smoke as in Duluth right now. So I don't want anything to do with this potential fire. So here is the Broadcorp tweet from earlier today that should just tell you how bad things are for the Republican Party. The only announced candidate for the Minnesota GOP is Jim Neuberger. The racist rep from Becker, remember when we said this? This was the guy that basically made the racist comment about the North Star line. And I'm paraphrasing, but not much. The implication was to get people from North Minneapolis to see their family members up in the prison in St. Cloud. That's why he didn't want to extend the North Star line, because I don't think I should be letting... I think the implication was he was saying black people shouldn't be allowed to go visit their family members in prison. That guy, he ran for Senate, got annihilated in 2018. I mean, that race, we said in 2018, I thought that race would be called within 3 minutes. They called that race against Neuberger, I think it was in 1 minute and 8 seconds from the polls closing. They called that race against Jim Neuberger. Wow. Jim freaking Neuberger is the only announced candidate for the Minnesota GOP chair. The former legislator, Minnesota GOP endorsed candidate for U.S. Senate in 2018. Other possible candidates are mulling it over, but the size of this mess at the Minnesota GOP headquarters is unknown, causing people to rethink a run. Stay tuned, as Broadcorp says. The only... Wow. I mean, it's not like we're talking about who wants to get their butt kicked by Amy Klobuchar in the next Senate race. We're not even talking about who wants to get annihilated by Ilhan Omar in Minnesota 5 or Betty McCollum in Minnesota 4. This is about who wants to basically take over and run the Minnesota GOP and make it a viable party. And almost a week out from the vacancy becoming available, the only person who's announced their candidacy, Jim Neuberger. Good luck. No, good luck. Bon voyage. Which brings me back to the point that Patrick sort of said, but brings it back around. Maybe Mike Lindell will be looking for a new job. We have to see a Mike Lindell update when I do return. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. God, that party is in trouble. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. Wow, that is you, Jim Neuberger, a guy that ran a campaign so bad they called that race 68 seconds after the polls closed. That's your great white hope. Wow. Well, good luck. No, seriously, good luck with that. 952-946-6205. Two bits of stories about Mike Lindell. Mike Lindell's federal countersuits against the voting machine company are being moved to the Washington, D.C.-based federal court, where MyPillow CEO and Cheska-based company face a $1.3 billion defamation claim. U.S. District Judge Patrick Schlitz on Schlitz beer. Maybe I was thinking to myself, it could be the family. It's Schiltz, S-C-H-I-L-T-Z. On Wednesday, ordered the two lawsuits filed by Lindell and MyPillow against Dominion Voting System and Smartmatic transferred to the District of Columbia, where the judge recently ruled the defamation suit against Lindell over his claims of those companies helping steal the 2020 election can continue. Wah, wah. In a hearing conducted last week via teleconference in Minnesota, Schiltz described the tremendous overlap between the cases of Minnesota and D.C. attorneys for Lindell and MyPillow, and they prefer to continue litigating in Minnesota, but they would not stand in play in the way of the transfer. Your lawsuit here is basically saying the lawsuit out of D.C. is illegal, Schiltz said. I understand you're alleging it is part of a bigger conspiracy, but the lawsuit in D.C. is the centerpiece of your lawsuit here, and it kind of seems strange we would take discovery and litigate whatever the D.C. lawsuit is a good lawsuit while you're out in D.C., taking discovery and litigating whether the D.C. lawsuit is a good lawsuit out there, which makes a tremendous amount of sense. But reminder, my guess is going to be their lawyer specifically filed that claim here in Minnesota to basically not have this happen because it's going to streamline the case dramatically. Earlier this month, U.S. District Judge Carl Nichols in the District of Columbia denied Lindell and his company's motions to dismiss the defamation case it held against them. The judge also said in a written decision the Dominion Voting Systems lawsuits against two other allies of former President Trump, Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani, can also proceed. The Lindell MyPillow countersuits allege the voting machine company weaponized the litigation process and harmed the company through lawsuits. Lindell continues to claim the company's voting machines were still used to steal the election from Trump. Which is interesting, which brings up the kind of an interesting element of what he's trying and his lawyers are trying to do now. MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell facing a substantial lawsuit from Dominion Voting System accusing him of defaming their company and costing the company over $1 billion. The case isn't going very well for Lindell, however. Law.com. LAW.com reported on Tuesday, last week the judge refused a motion to dismiss the trial, so Lindell's legal team is trying something different. They're attempting to bypass the trial altogether and go straight to the appeal. That's an interesting strategy. Last night, Lindell's lawyers filed documents asking that their argument that Dominion was acting as the government in 2020 be taken to the appellate court. The problem is that they haven't even had the trial and gotten a ruling to appeal Dominion contracts with some local governments, but that doesn't mean they aren't the government. So, the problem is they haven't gotten the trial and they haven't to get in the ruling of appeal Dominion contracts with local governments, but that doesn't mean that they are the government, and that's actually been established law that you can get into. So, say a construction company wants to help build a road, and so they get into a contract with a local government to build the road. Well, that construction company is not the government then. It's not that local government. You can't do it that way. They just have a contract with them. Dominion contracts with local governments, but they're not part of the government. So they're going to lose this appeal anyway. It's not a smart appeal. MyPillow's attorney, including Alan Dershowitz, that explains that, and Supreme Court veteran Nathan Lewin argue they believe the appeals court will rule in their favor to find Dominion's complaint did not satisfy the most stringent actual malice requirement under New York Times v. Sullivan, which applies to a government actor operating in the context of a large public debate. That is because the complaint fails to allege the personal statement or act by Michael Lindell showing that he knew the allegations concerning Dominion were false, or that he recklessly disregarded the truth of his allegations. I'll get back to that in a second. And B, the robust public debate surrounding the subject matter of Lindell's statements affords him the constitutional protection that bars any interference that he spoke with actual malice. All right. Here's the problem with both of those arguments. So, and I'll go with B first. Where did this allegation originally come from? I mean, I'm not talking about which dark web QAnon backrooms chat room put it out there. When was the first time someone got in front of a camera and said, oh, Dominion stole this from you, which I'm not saying, this is what they were saying, and Dominion was working with the Chinese and all these false things? If I'm not mistaken, It was Sidney Powell. It was Rudy Giuliani. And it was Mike Lindell. And so you can't start the fire and then act as if, well, since now the entire building is burning down, we can't be held accountable because, you know, it's a much larger fire now. You can't pull that off. That's, you know, you were the one that were getting kind of reckless with the gasoline and the matches. That's why you were in trouble. The other problem is this. Okay, so say that you did actually, and this goes back to something that we have on this show a few times. So you do, whether or not you did not know this for truth. I mean, and once again, if Mike Lindell truly does believe this, which I kind of believe he does. Even though, you know, there comes a point where you have to step back and say, can I prove it? And so far, once again, we're still in the Sasquatch TV show where there's no, they keeps talking all these times about we're going to deliver this evidence. He said he was going to have it as a symposium in South Dakota. He was going to deliver all this evidence and that no one said his evidence there. And then he basically accused his own symposium of being hijacked or being overrun or, you know, whatever the case. But now he's saying, I've got new evidence and I don't know what he's talking about. Needless to say, there comes a point where a rational individual, when they realized there was some question to the accusations that they were making, would step back from those accusations and say, tell the truth, I'm sorry, I don't know what really happened. I think this happened. I have suspicions this happened, but I have no proof or evidence that happened. And so henceforth, I can't really say what did happen. Which goes back to what we have said here on the show. Mike, you are a guy with a lot of media credentials right now. If you held a press conference at your MyPillow factory, you said, get all the media down there. You get Care 11, Channel 9, Channel 4. You get the Star Trib, Pioneer Press. You can get everyone down there. Get them all in front of you, and you can do one of two things. One, you can get all your evidence and show it to everyone and say, see, here's my evidence. I'm finally proving my case. Or if you do not, and by the way, be forthright. Give them copies of all that evidence. Show them what you're doing, not just show them some big whiteboards or just a blurry piece of paper that's got some numbers on it. You need to give them the actual evidence that shows your case. Or you profusely apologize. Say, I'm so, so sorry. I really screwed up. My bad. I believed some online things as true. I trusted some people that were not telling me the truth. I apologize. It's one of the two. And that's what we have said here numerous times, because I don't want to see this guy necessarily lose his company. That's a lot of Minnesota jobs that are going to disappear. Because I can't believe Dominion Voting Systems is going to, if they take over MyPillow, is going to want to run MyPillow. So that's unfortunate. But he had his windows to do that. And so when you go back to that first case where the complaint fails to allege any personal statement or act by Michael Lindell showing that he knew the allegations concerning Dominion were false or that he recklessly disregarded the truth about the allegations, the second all of a sudden Dominion filed that lawsuit against you, you should have tap danced like the news networks did and gotten yourself away from this. Unfortunately, going back to the story from previously before, you're quoted in the Star Tribune story as saying that the Dominion voting machines weaponized the litigation process, harmed his company through lawsuits. He continues to claim that company's voting machines were used to steal the election from Trump. You can't be continuing to. So not only are you the person who's put, you started the fire and that, and arguing, well, now that the whole building's on fire, how can you blame me? I just started a small fire. But now you're sort of you're saying, even though I'm still spreading gasoline and matches all over the place and lighting up more and more fires, you can't accuse me of being an arsonist because, well, you know, how can you prove that I knew what I was doing was wrong? Well, the reality is you have the opportunity at that point to come into the camera and say, I'm sorry, or at least at the very least saying, I can't validate or I can't prove my statements, but I think these are true, but I need to make sure I step back from this. That's where you're going to get into trouble. Lindell has spent the better part of the last year searching for evidence. He says he'll reinstate Trump, Donald Trump. Oh, God, I was so disappointed that that didn't happen on August 13th. That was supposed to happen on August 13th. 9-0 rooting for the Supreme Court, which I have no idea why they were going to rule on it. It's going to ascend the throne somehow. We have a democracy here. I'm not sure how that was going to work, but needless to say. He even wanted to say too far to host a cyber symposium where he would reveal his facts that conclude Trump was actually elected in 2020. There was no evidence shown to prove that, however. He persisted in his crusade, claiming that at some point the Supreme Court will receive his evidence and rule in a 9-0 decision that Trump will be reinstated. So while Dominion could make the case that Rudy Giuliani and Sidney Powell knew their allegations were false, that may not be the case with Lindell, who appears to have immersed himself in the delusion. So, yeah, maybe, you know, and maybe that's the defense he goes with. He said he didn't know these things were false, that because I want to be careful how I say this, but if you're trying to find a legal defense, how do I say it like this? If you're trying to find a legal defense, would it be that crazy for him to say, well, he's kind of mentally compromised on this, and he just honestly believes that Dominion did this, and that this is he doesn't know that these statements are false. He truly believes these things are factual. As I mentioned earlier, I think that he does. I honestly do. All right, take a break. Come on back. Some other stories to get to as well, including the sad, sad story of the killing and by the driver of the Attorney General of South Dakota who killed that guy. There's a new story out and some new developments in that case. I'll get to that in a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. Five 5:40 in the afternoon. Good to be with you here as you drive on home. Matt McNeil, the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Speaking of driving, on September 12th, 2020, Joseph Beauvert's truck went into the ditch at around 7:30 p.m., smashed into a bale of hay. He summoned his cousin, Victor Nemec, N-E-M-E-C, to the scene, and after surveying the damage incurred by the pickup's front bumper, the two decided to retrieve it in the morning. Nemec recalled dropping Beauvert off, 55 years old, at his home in Highmore and hearing him say he was going to go to bed. Shortly before 10:30 p.m., though, Beauvert was back in the area armed with a flashlight and walking around the north shoulder of the road. Family members don't know exactly why he was there. South Dakota Attorney General Jason Ravensburg, R-A-V-N-B-O-R-G, Ravensburg, was heading towards Pier that night, capping off what had been a demanding week of travel. By the way, I should mention, I'm reading out of the Vanity Fair article on this. And this Vanity Fair article, there's a reason why I'm reading with this one first, because you'll understand in a second. But Vanity Fair does say, kind of gets the idea of what exactly happened that night. He's capping off what had been a demanding week of travel. Early in the evening, Ravensburg said that he was in the town of Redfield to speak at the Lincoln Day dinner. It was the second Republican event Ravensburg attended as many days, having appeared at a Lincoln Day dinner in Rapid City held on September 11th. The two-hour journey from Redfield to Pier started out routine enough. He called his father, a nightly ritual ever since his mother passed away 3 years earlier. The call dropped, a common occurrence in the state blanketed by dead zones on cell phone service. And as he listened to the broadcast of the Minnesota Twins game, a classic soundtrack of an iconic summer drives through the upper Midwest, he passed through Highmore. Ravensburg considered stopping for gas before opting to press on for the final 46 miles to Pier. It was around there, he said later, that he turned the radio off after hearing the Twins collect the final win out for the win over Cleveland. Several minutes later, at 10:20, according to a cell phone data obtained by the investigators, he unlocked his phone. And now this is as he's driving. Unlocked his phone and signed onto his Yahoo email password account. From there, Ravensburg scanned headlines before landing on an article published by a far-right wing website about Riding the Dragon, a documentary billed as an expose on the secret world of Joe Biden and his family's relationship with China and the sinister business deals that enriched them at the Americans' expense. By the way, if you're looking for that, Do you know how many business deals the Trump family had with China? Tons! Oh, those patent deals alone. Those should be looked into. But I regress. So basically, he was clicking on, you know, self-gratification material for Republicans. At 10:22, prosecutors determined he looked at his locked his phone. A minute later, Romsberg veered to the right shoulder where Bovaer was standing, sending his head through the windshield. So now it's known that he was on his phone and he was, yeah, he, you know, it definitely wasn't paying attention to the road, at least leading up to the accident. At least that's what they determined. Now, once again, we're talking about rural South Dakota, so it's kind of hard to determine when exactly the impact happened. It's, you know, because once again, you just, my guess is going to be they have not released all the information on this. Romsberg, the trove Trump Republican Attorney General of South Dakota, will take a plea deal in his criminal case stemming from a crash last year where he killed a man walking along a rural highway. Now, once again, I do want to make sure we point out this guy undeniably killed this dude. That is undeniable. He undeniably killed this dude. It's clear he was paying attention to his cell phone as he was driving far more than he was driving on the road. And one thing we will never know because of what had happened, we will never know if he really was he impaired at all. He's coming from another, you know, event, Republican event. But I can tell you right now, there is no way on the world, in the world, a Native American or an African American in South Dakota would have been charged with the misdemeanors this guy got charged with, period. And let's just be honest, if it was a Native American or an African American in South Dakota, they would already be in jail for the next 20 years of their life. Probably locked up by this attorney general who probably says, "We're tough on crime." Beadle County State Attorney Michael Moore, who is one of the two prosecutors on the case, told the Associated Press there won't be a trial and there will be a plea entered, but he declined to discuss further details of the agreement. The AP reported on Wednesday, a day before the trial was set to begin. Romsberg faced three misdemeanor charges that each carry sentences up to 30 days in jail and up to a $500 fine. So at worst, this guy killed a guy with his car. While he was driving, distracted on his cell phone. And the worst that he could get is 90 days in jail and a $500 fine. Please. If that is not, I mean, if in Republicans, you want to know why your party here in Minnesota is imploded, it's this kind of blind freaking loyalty to your party mates that makes you guys a laughing stock. Now, the difference between Minnesota and South Dakota is that in South Dakota, they're fools. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I see the meme where it's, you know, whether you pick of the Republican state, primarily in the southeastern United States, but in some of these states where Republicans have been winning for decades, and yet people have, their wages have not gotten better, their quality of life has not gotten better. As a matter of fact, in both of those cases, they've gotten worse. There's less opportunities, people are less happy, people are angrier, and yet at no point do these people look at the Republicans who clearly through their policies have kept them in worse and worse conditions and say, well, maybe we should vote those guys out. Instead, they go, I'm going to get another 4 years of this. Yoo-hoo! This should not have been a difficult case. This should not have been a difficult case. Because like I'll say, I'll reiterate what I said again. Is there anyone out there that thinks if this was a Native American or an African American in South Dakota who had killed this guy with their car, that they wouldn't already be in jail for the next 30 years of their life? Of course they would be. Of course they would be. This guy, because he's the Republican Attorney General, he is going to be at most charged with 90, at most, he's not going to even get close to that, 90 days worth of jail time and a $500 fine for murdering a guy with his car. Investigators have said Romsberg, who later claimed he thought he hit a deer. Now, mind you, he said this as the victim's head came through the windshield of his car. They found, I believe, his eyeglasses in the front seat of the car. So that entire argument is garbage because it's clear that a human being came through the front windshield, which is once again why I think you have to ask the question of how impaired was this driver when he was driving. Roundsburg said he thought he'd hit a deer. He's distracted when he veered into the shoulder on September 12th, killed 55-year-old Joseph Beauvais. Roundsburg unlocked his phone minutes before the crash, clicked on the right-wing website's headline about an expose on Joe Biden and sinister business deals that enriched them at American expense. According to Vanity Fair's Tom Clute's in-depth story was published hours before the news broke that Roundsburg plea deal notes in the case as consumed South Dakota's political class and caused a rift between two Donald Trump allies. So basically, let's make sure we understand this. The Vanity Fair article comes out. This is why I read that first. The Vanity Fair article comes out on this absolute disgusting human being. And hours afterwards, where basically you find out, oh yeah, he was a distracted driver. He doesn't want anyone to look into it. He's going to accept a plea deal. 90 days in jail at most and a $500 fine for killing somebody. Wow. Governor Kristi Noem, a Republican star and potential 2024 contender, urged Roundsburg and himself describes pro-life Second Amendment. Pro-life! Ha! Sure you are when you're not killing them with your car, jackass. Pro-life, Second Amendment, pro-business conservative to resign, according to the report, and yet Roundsburg continues exerting his power in a deep red South Dakota and beyond, from joining a 17-state legal effort in December to overturn Trump's 2020 defeat to teaming up last month with the Republican attorneys general to hope to declare New York State concealed carry law unconstitutional. Because once again, for these people, even when you have a guy who is clearly guilty of murdering someone with his truck, if he's a Republican and a Republican leader, well, you can't hold him accountable. He's one of us. This is why your Republican parties are going to fail across the country, is because when you get to the point where you're blindly defending this kind of crap behavior and handing him sweetheart deals, please. According to the AP, South Dakota's Republican lawmakers considering impeaching Roundsburg, but momentum quickly died after that. Roundsburg attorneys filed a motion last month alleging the pattern of alcoholism and prescription drug abuse by Beauvais had at least one family member, a cousin, to believe that depressed Beauvais killed himself by jumping in front of Roundsburg's car. Wait a minute, you jumped in front of the car, but you acknowledge you hit him on the shoulder. Okay. Tells you what kind of a horrible human being Roundsburg is. Beauvais' widow reported plans to file a wrongful death lawsuit against Roundsburg, who has said not said whether he'll seek re-election in 2022. But let's be honest with you. He could seek re-election in 2022, and he'd get elected again in South Dakota. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, he killed a guy with his car, but, you know, Democrats, man. And that's not because Democrats are bad, but because these people are freaking brainwashed. Now, granted, I guarantee he won't get as many votes as he did last time. But that's the difference between South Dakota and Minnesota. Because as this whole thing in Minnesota with Lazaro breaks down and we get more and more information about what the heck happened there, it's going to be far more toxic in the Twin Cities metro area. And it's going to definitely impact Republicans across the state. This here, yeah, he might not win with 40% of the vote. He'll still win with 20% of the vote, but he'll still win. Because at the end of the day, even after the Republicans have basically hurt their own constituents over and over again, and likely, like I said, intentionally sickened and killed many of them with coronavirus just to try to make Joe Biden look bad. If you can't convince people to vote against that kind of evil tyranny at that point, well, then I don't know how in the heck you're going to stop them. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Good to see Robert Pilot out there speaking to the crowd over at the Line 3 protest over the state capitol. Nice picture of him out there speaking to the crowd. Good to see that whole crew out there. Actually, once again, it's just a disgrace that this is going on. And once again, all the people that sit there and push this, the minute this thing starts leaking oil like crazy, we need to go to them, and you actually need to go to them, and I mean, I hope we can stop it, but we're probably not going to be able to stop it. But all the people that advocated for this and said, it's not going to be safe, then when the minute this thing starts leaking, we need to go to them and say, well, it's your job then to clean it up. You are the ones that pushed for it. And of course, well, we trusted them. We didn't think it was going to be perfect. But, you know, come on. Why are you holding us accountable for the words that we demanded that you listen to us for? I mean, for goodness sakes. God, this is ugly. I'll just mention this. Monroe, Louisiana graphic body camera video kept in secret for more than 2 years shows a Louisiana state trooper pummeling a black motorist 18 times with a flashlight in attack. The trooper defended as pain compliance. I'm not resisting. I'm not resisting. Aaron Larry Bowman can be heard screaming between blows and the footage obtained by the Associated Press. The May 2019 beating followed a traffic stop, left him with a broken jaw, 3 broken ribs, a broken wrist, a gash to his head that required 6 staples to close. Bowman's encounter near his Monroe home came less than 3 weeks after troopers from the same embattled agency punched, stunned, and dragged another black motorist, Ronald Green, before he died in police custody on a rural roadside in northeast Louisiana. Video of Green's death similarly remained under wraps before the AP obtained and published it earlier this year. Federal prosecutors are examining both cases in a widening investigation into police brutality and potential cover-ups involving both troopers and state police brass. State police didn't investigate the attack on Bowman until 536 days after it occurred, even though it was captured on body camera, and only did so after Bowman brought a civil lawsuit. The state police released the statement Wednesday. Now, all of a sudden, now, oh my God, oh, listen to what we got to say. They said that Jacob Brown, the white trooper who struck Bowman, engaged in excessive and unjustifiable actions, failed to report the use of force to his supervisors, and intentionally mislabeled the body camera video. They knew. Once again, you can't call all cops bad apples. How many cops were involved in covering up this mess? How many cops knew one of their own beat the living daylights out of an innocent man who wasn't doing anything to justify the beating and kept him on the force patrolling? But now that the media sees what this guy actually did, oh, now we're getting tough on this guy. Look how tough we are. You are pathetic. And once again, this is a reminder that this crap has been going on for centuries. And now we have the video cameras around to prove it. In this case, evidence that proved this guy was beaten wrongly and it was purposely kept under wraps. I'm sorry, every one of those people should be fired. Before resigning in March, Brown tallied 23 use of force incidents dating back to 2015. 19 of them targeting black people. He even boasted about going after black people. It just is disturbing. But this is the America we live in. And we, you know, as much as we get other things that are trying to take our attention away, we have to remind ourselves, this crap is going on a lot. And the system that is in place is there to make sure that true justice does not get handed down. That's the real crime. We are back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.